What a pretty song. You know, David Ault is a Facebook friend of mine, and now I know who he is. He's a songwriter. Do you know all your Facebook friends? You know, when they ask me to be friends, if we have 100 Unity friends in common, I figure, okay. We'll be friends. This isn't doing what it usually does. So, question, are potlucks sacred? Absolutely. In this church, they are. Food is one of our core values. It's over here on Chakra Man. It's just the first Sunday of every month, we gather to feast together, come hell or high water. And you can probably smell it coming from the kitchen today. But why? Why are potlucks so important? Even those of you who don't stay for them would probably acknowledge potlucks are one of the ways we build community. People get to know each other here. And that's nice, but what makes them sacred? What makes them something we would think long and hard before we gave up? Well, why do you come to church? Beneath the music or the message or the meditation, and even beneath seeing your friends, I believe we come to church to find the sacred in our ordinary lives. You might not be conscious of that, but our souls are always seeking deeper connection with the divine. Our goal in Unity is to learn how to live in the world. Sorry, oak allergy. And I just affirmed that I have it. Okay. I'll work on that this afternoon. Our goal in Unity is to live in the world knowing we're spiritual beings while fully participating in the human experience. Noticing the sacred in the ordinary reminds us we're not only human beings. Our essence is divine. So for something to be sacred doesn't mean that angels sing and the heavens part. The dictionary definition is something entitled to reverence or respect, highly valued and important. But food is on that list, literally on our list. Some of your best memories might be sitting at someone's table. I've always been a bit obsessed with food. So I can remember what we ate at nearly every important event, sometimes nothing else, but I remember the food. Well, but my grandmother made caramels at Christmas and wrapped them in wax paper. And when I think about my years at Baylor, I think of Diet Dr. Pepper. And there was a place in Waco called George's where the chicken fried steaks were the size of a dinner plate. You remember that. When company comes to visit in Wimberley, do you think about where you're going to take them to eat? For some of you, the Leaning Pear is sacred. For me, Whole Foods feels like walking into a temple. And when you think about our potlucks here, you know Tommy's pulled pork will be on the table. It's sacred. It's okay to make food sacred. The Bible makes food sacred. Food is all through the Bible. It begins with a hungry man and woman, and it ends in Revelation with the tree of life giving off a different kind of fruit every month. The original fruit of the month club is in Revelation. Jesus' first miracle was turning water to wine. Maybe his biggest miracle was feeding 5,000 or more with a few loaves and fish. Jews to this day commemorate their escape from Egypt with a Passover Seder, and they remember God gave them manna in the wilderness. The Bible emphasizes food for several reasons, I think. They were living pretty close to subsistence level, so food literally kept them alive, as it does us. But it was harder to find. If you had to walk out the door and live off that rocky land, which is a lot like Israel, how well would you eat without a gun? You might get to have a slingshot. So food was scarce, and what could you grow in those rocks? Food was sacred. Even so, the Middle East has always had a strong culture of hospitality. If a stranger showed up, you fed him. You might be saving his life. They didn't have much concept of individuality. It was all about the family and the tribe. So there were a lot of communal meals. They would eat together to seal contracts. They couldn't read. Eating with someone signaled approval of them, connection with them. That's why Jesus scandalized towns when he ate with the prostitutes and tax collectors. Of course, he also ate with his friends. We're approaching Easter, and we'll be talking next week about the Last Supper. Again, food as an enduring symbol of love and camaraderie. It's why the early Christians ate together too, after Jesus had come and gone. The early Christians shared everything, but I think it was also a show of solidarity. In Acts, it says, every day, these early Christians continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people, and the Lord added to their number daily. Of course, people in the Bible celebrated with food the same way we do. You know, when the prodigal son returned home, the father killed the fatted calf. They had a feast. There's a theologian named Alexander Schmemann who says, in the Bible, the food that man eats, the world of which he must partake in order to live, is given to him by God, and it is given as communion with God. So if eating is a way to know God, then our lives might be more sacred than we thought, several times a day. What if eating is not a secular activity, even in a noisy restaurant? What if food is an experience of the holy? This is why we teach children to bless their food. It's a reminder of our connection with the creator of the food and the creator of us. Food shows up in the very first chapter in Genesis, the creation story. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. Then 9 chapters later, he included meat. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything. Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament says, go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved of what you do. And the Apostle Paul told the church in Corinth, so whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. So see, we were meant to taste sacredness. We can rejoice about food, no guilt. And of course, food was used metaphorically too. The psalmist said, God satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. Jesus said, I'm the bread of life. And he talked about living water. When the Spirit speaks in Revelation, it's trying to get the churches to pay attention to their own divinity. And it says, listen, I'm standing at the door knocking. If you hear my voice and open the door, I'll come into you and eat with you, and you with me. So there's that eating together again. It's communion. It's a bond. This is why I don't think church is going away. That is, it won't change form as much as we expect. It will not be all online. Because as often as we keep saying we've got to reinvent church, I believe people will always want to get together in a room with other warm bodies. And they'll probably eat. Skype and FaceTime are great. The church in the future might not always have a minister. It might be more like a discussion. It might or might not have music. Even the coffee and cookies might give way to something healthier or not. But I still think people will want to get together, especially for spiritual growth and exploration. It's tough to do spirituality on your own forever. Even Charles Fillmore, Unity's co-founder, who was constantly downloading directly from God. He was a true mystic. He read everything he could about other religions, and he wanted to teach it to other people. Being a spiritual being in a human experience takes a joint effort, and where two or more are gathered, there's food. And we aren't just sharing the spiritual journey per se, we're sharing our ordinary lives. I see that on our Facebook resource page, the one that's not public, that's just for us, like who knows a good seamstress, who knows a good cardiologist, Jeff's out of the hospital, he's doing a lot better, and he is. We find the sacred there too, on Facebook. If only in the immediate response from other Unity people trying to help each other. So maybe potlucks aren't your thing. What are other ways you might experience the sacred in your life? You can talk about this over lunch. I mean, for a lot of people, a sacred experience is being outdoors. For a lot of people, it's serving others. I see the divine in children, maybe because I don't have any. For me, it's easy to see God shining through them, and it reminds me who we all truly are. So, working on this talk, I've been trying to define a sacred experience. What is it, and how does it feel? I think maybe it's expressing our true selves. It's when we feel at home in a place or with certain people. I mean, isn't that what heaven feels like? You feel at home where you're safe and appreciated, and you're not alone. We create our own heaven on earth. So if a sacred experience is being ourselves in connection with other parts of creation, it opens up the possibilities for sacred experience. So it might or might not have felt like a sacred experience to you last Saturday when you were here cleaning the church, scrubbing these chairs, washing windows. We cleaned the tables that we eat potluck on too. It was hard work, but it was also a sacred experience. Being with other people who are also God in expression. Being in this beautiful place, making it shine. When the families got together a couple of weeks ago, the kids went to Serenity Garden and painted these gourds that Tommy had grown and dried so they could make birdhouses. That was a sacred experience. You may or may not be thinking about God in the moment, but if God is all there is, you can't not be experiencing it. Even though our thoughts can get in the way of noticing it. But if you're with other people, you're with God, whether you like their personalities or not. If you're in nature, you're with God. The divine is also on I-35. When we say God is all there is, we have to mean it. So holiness underlies all of creation. What's sacred is whatever creates space for the universe or grace to work in your life. Melinda would use the word grace. Grace is the universe biased in your favor. It's that things have a way of working out. It's the reason we can trust whatever we're involved in can be a sacred experience. As soon as we remember that we live and move and have our being within a universe of love. Everything we see, do, and have is an expression of that love for us, and especially the food. So let's take these thoughts into meditation. When we meditate, we just become still and quiet and turn within. This is a time when we remember our connection with all that is. We're never separate from it. But sometimes we want to consciously feel it. And so find that place within you where there is peace and well-being and love. Sometimes it takes a minute to work through all the other stuff to get to that place of peace. But it's always there. Always accessible. And while you're in this inner chamber, bring to mind some of the ways you are spiritually nourished. How are you fed? Maybe it's a church service, the Bible, the other people here, and yes, the food. Maybe it's nature. Maybe it's the service you're giving to the world. There's so many ways to connect with our divine essence and bring it forth on the earth. You are an opening for God to express on earth. It's why you came, and it's what we remember when we come here every week. And so take another moment and ask yourself, how am I spiritually fed? Whatever it is that nourishes your soul, give thanks for that. And see whether you can give back to that place or person, to that organization, that thing, that song. We give where we are spiritually fed. We're grateful for all the ways that the divine shows up in our lives. Grateful for all the nourishment that we experience as spiritual beings in this human journey. And so it is. Amen.